We see a young Avery Thomas getting ready to walk into his first big high school party. Some of his friends from baseball are milling about, plenty of juice around. We are anti-underage drinking here at Queering Things. We skip forward a few hours, and everybody's run out of juice. Oh no, Avery mentions that they've got some at home, though. Sadly, it's on the other side of the forest, and nobody can drive because they're out of gas, I guess. That's fine. Avery says they'll be right back and bounds into the forest, sprints home and grabs the juice, and then makes it back in less than 5 minutes, the closest he's ever gotten to going full wolf form before coming to the valley. Their friends start questioning him about how he could possibly have made it that far with, you know, the short amount of time that he had, and how could you be so fast? And then suddenly lights and sirens quickly break up the party and everybody goes home for the evening, and it's quickly forgotten. And we fade to black. Welcome back to Queering People Saving Throws, your absolute favorite D&D podcast done by this group of people who are super cool and queer.
Fantastic intro. No notes.
Just to get you started, let's go around the circle and reintroduce ourselves.
My name is August. My pronouns are they, them, and I play Avery, pronouns he, him. And my fun fact of the day for Avery is that his favorite movie as a child was Homeward Bound.
That's a good choice.
Avery.
He was about 10 when it came out and may have begged his parents to go and see it in the theaters many, many times. As many as possible.
That's adorable.
He's wearing out their VHS tape.
Adorable.
Hello, I am Elena. My pronouns are she, they, and I play Gemma. Pronouns she, her, and my fun fact for this week about Gemma, I'm going to just ride on the bandwagon of movies. One of her favorite movies of all time is Sleepless in Seattle, but only because Moira loved it so much, and so they would watch it together. So even though Gemma is not a rom-com fan typically, that one is like special place in the heart because of Moira.
Aww.
That is adorable.
Okay, I'm Sam, and my pronouns are she, they, and I play Mo, whose pronouns are they, them. And I don't have, my fun fact is not movie related, but that's my fun fact for Mo this week is that their first relationship was that when they were in grade 5 to a girl named Amanda.
Aww.
And they asked her out with a bunch of tulips that they had picked from their dad's garden. And then they got in trouble for it later.
So cute.
Did Amanda say yes?
Yes.
Of course.
And they dated for 3 months.
Wow, that's a long relationship
for 10-year-olds. Oh,
gosh.
Cute. That's actually really impressive.
Like fifth grade married. That's great. Good for them.
That's basically common law right there.
Yeah, at that point. Seriously. Domestic partners at that point.
I'm KJ. My pronouns are also she, they, and I play Courtney, whose pronouns are she, her. And a fun fact about Courtney, her favorite candy is peanut butter cups.
I trust her.
Yeah.
That's not that I
didn't before, but I do now more.
Yeah, she doesn't have them a lot, but they are her favorite, which she's like having a treat.
Hello, I'm Noah. My pronouns are he, him, and I play everybody else. So pronouns quite varied. My fun fact this week is about Avery's parents. Ray and Jay, they are both Texans and both originally from big cities, one from Austin, one from Dallas, but Ray moved out to a small town shortly after their early childhood, so they're really more of a small town kid than a, you know, city Texan, but they still own it. Now that we've met everybody, let's get you caught up on what happened last week.
Here's what
you missed on the road so
road
far.
Thank you. I was like, we have an intro for this. You can just use that.
I'm going to just steal it. It's fine.
As you said earlier, we're very well trained on this podcast.
My brain immediately went like, here's what you missed on the road so far.
Yeah,
it's just,
you haven't listened to this podcast in a while. It's time to catch you up.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love us.
So we decided to take a little mind trip and, you know, didn't start out so great. Kind of got separated right at the beginning there. And,
So when we went on this little mind trick last time, we saw a lot of things about Avery's past. Most importantly, we saw Avery meeting his parents for the first time, which is kind of a crazy thing to have to think of, that you meet your parents. But we're in a little bit of a weird situation anyway, so makes sense.
Yeah, and then we had to go find Lizzie because she'd run off to see Avery's first kiss. And so we ended up there in this little football field.
Baseball
field.
Mo, like, not remembering the difference actually makes it way funnier, and you should keep that in. Mo's like, we're on a field. I don't know what sport's being played.
I don't know. Grass and balls flying.
Something with balls. it was cute.
Oh my god, so then, like, we, like, saw Avery, like, really talking to this, like, dog that they were walking, and, like, when we get back to Texas, I'm, like, totally going to make Avery tell me what Trio is thinking.
And just like that, we're all caught up, and we're back in the foggy forest of Avery's mind. We've got Captain Aya, Courtney, Lizzie, Mo, Avery, and Gemma all having just witnessed Avery on their first dog walking job. Aya says, well, okay, then I think we should be able to move forward pretty shortly. Avery, just try to focus on some of your most werewolf-type moments. Dig deep into the aggression that you've tried to suppress for so long, and try to focus on the origin point of those feelings, those animalistic feelings, if you can. And clearly, we've all been through a lot, and we've all shown that we support you, and there's no need for you to hide behind any walls or anything. Lizzie says, oh my god, yes, we've totally seen it all, so don't even worry about it. She winks. She nudges Courtney and says, because totally, did you see that Avery is a little bit of a bottom right there? Like, we all saw that, right? Like,
that's, oh my god, no, I was not looking.
Oh my god, okay, Courtney, get this. Avery's... A can little Avery bit of hear, a bottom.
Can Avery hear this?
Roll is perception. This on
the, yeah, because I'm like, we're going to have to have a reaction.
Stealth post.
Should I be rolling?
No, that's okay, because Lizzie's saying it to you.
Yeah.
Boy.
Okay, never mind. You don't have to roll, Avery. Lizzie rolled a nat one.
So, oh, good. You can Avery doesn't hear this, what? Because there's no way he's going to be able to focus on a goddamn thing if he hears that.
And she's like, oh my god, did you hear that, Avery, the bottom? Just a little bit, but in a hot way. It's fine.
Oh my god, you know, like, you need to, like, learn to, like, give people some, like, privacy. We were supposed to stick together.
But she also told Avery to drink it first, and they didn't. So, not my fault that I got to see the cool stuff.
Got to see, went searching for.
Yeah, this is very specifically went searching for.
Same thing, right?
Very interesting choice of words.
Avery is going to try to really focus. He's going to go beat red and then pretend he didn't hear it. Like, try really hard to, like, he's not looking anyone in the face. He's just, like, focus, okay. Right, focus. Yeah, I'm going to focus.
Roll constitution or history, I think we did.
History. It's a 12.
Okay, with a 12, you dig really deep into the feelings that you've tamped down over the years about your dad's teaching you different tactics for moving on from anger and aggression and whatnot. And the forest starts flying past everybody, and trees are whipping past, and it feels like there's wind, but there's no wind. We land at the bottom of a set of stairs inside of a house, and it's right next to the door. You know, there's like a classic little sitcom setting, and you see at the top of the stairs, a young Avery, about 11 years old, and he's sitting on the stairs, sitting close to one of the banisters and kind of hugging it as he hears his dad's arguing in the other room. They clearly think that he's in bed and can't hear any of this that's going on. The door is just a little bit cracked, though, and so we can hear, well, I just don't think that there's going to be a way for him to be able to be a normal boy in high school, because if he's having these kind of reactions now, then how are we supposed to make sure that he's okay when kids are bullying him in school? And we can't be there to watch out for him constantly. His other dad, Ray, responds back with, well, now, you really don't think that he's going to be able to, I mean, he's going to get bullied for sure, but there's no way that he's, I mean, we've taught him so much so far that I think he's going to be able to pull it out. And he's been working on his breathing techniques, and he hasn't shown claws in such a long time. Jay pipes in with the, what about when the other kids call him a freak? He's going to be hurt because we've never let him feel like he's different. Sometimes even I think he's weird, but like he's a good kid and he's trying his best, but those kids, they're going to pick on the worst parts of him. And you know that. Ray pipes back with the, don't hate. He is not a freak. Do not. He's never going to be something. Inhuman maybe, but he's better than human. He's better than the rest of us. You know that. He's the sweetest kid we've ever met. Yeah.
I think Avery like left.
Little
after
Avery?
Little Avery left after the inhuman comment before the like nice stuff. I think at that point he like turns tail, literally turns tail and just kind of like slides back into his room and he is crying.
So everything else that big Avery's about to see is new information.
But that,
yes.
Oh, my
that,
feelings.
That last little hint of good stuff is all you hear before it changes to murmurs because Avery's memory could only pick up the fringes of it, and it doesn't pick up anymore. And Lizzie, with a decidedly different attitude than she had 10 minutes ago, turns to Avery and puts a hand on his shoulder and just doesn't say anything, just pats it reassuringly.
He kind of like shifts his shoulders a little bit and tries to like reorient himself. He's got kind of a interesting expression on his face hearing this as a, I guess I should do this in dialogue, not just like telling you his inner monologue.
That's okay. A bit of both.
Hearing this as an adult now, as opposed to like hearing it as a child, sort of hits a little different. He kind of like sniffs a little and goes like, well, I guess they were right.
Captain Aya deeply like nods her head and says, my apologies for my insensitivity whenever you first came to my village. I made some snap judgments and I do apologize for that. You were just a kid who didn't know any different. She sort of nods as the house breaks apart back into the foggy forest around everyone. Avery, will you make one more history check?
Yeah.
As you try to focus back on these feelings that you suppressed.
That's a 6.
Hey, so the forest around us changes ever so slightly. It becomes decidedly less foggy and is more of a dusk lit evening out in the hill country. You made it out to the beautiful section of Texas. Not gonna lie, it's the best section if anybody asks. But you remember going on a school field trip and everybody getting an opportunity to walk along this hiking trail. And somewhat similar to this trip that you've been on this past few days, you got left behind and took a wrong turn and got lost somewhere. And we see a small Avery about 5 years old. So a little tiny
kindergarten.
Avery.
Kindergarten
Avery.
Little baby Avery.
Walking
literally
along this
puppy.
Really, it's barely a trail. The only reason they've picked up on it is because they have some heightened senses and smell abilities that show them the trails that the animals walk, you know? And so they end up in this clearing and he started to realize that he's gotten lost and is starting to cry a little bit. And Lizzie turns to adult Avery and says, oh my God, wait, I don't want to see little Avery cry. I didn't sign up for those. And starts to go try to comfort little Avery.
I'm assuming she can't interact with a memory.
As she walks up to little Avery.
Okay.
What?
She kneels down and starts to comfort him and say, hey, it's all right. You'll be okay. And like brushes a hair behind his ear and tries to like pat him on the back. And from everybody else's perspective at the back of the group, you see a deer comforting Avery. But it's also Lizzie at the same time. But you see the deer overlapping at the same time. Captain Aya takes a step forward and starts to comfort little Avery as well, moving forward to just sort of stand there with him, not reach out to him, but just sort of be present. And at the same time, you see an owl that had floated down and landed at the exact spot where Ao was standing.
Big Avery, adult Avery, kind of gets this like sudden recognition look of like, I remember this. Looks at Ao and goes, how's this happening? I remember those animals. They kept me safe and I wasn't so scared once they left.
She glances back and says, I've never quite been sure of how the memory spells work, but there's something about the astral plane that ties it all together in a weird way, so...
But that was, like, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not quite... Sometimes the temporal distortion that happens between the planes gets a little jumbled, we'll say, and I don't think we were actually there, but maybe... Part of the reason these animals came to you is because we were here. And she sort of glances up at Courtney, Mo, and Gemma.
Courtney's going to go in there. I feel like Courtney wants to know what animal she's going to be.
I love that motivation for her. Interest. I love that motivation for her.
As Courtney makes it over and puts an arm on Avery's other shoulder, you see a fox come back and sort of nuzzle up against Avery's shoulder. And it's ever so slight. It's just a slight little nuzzle to let him know that he's there.
I feel like Gemma steps forward, but, like, doesn't actually, like, get close enough, like, to touch Avery, but just, like, kind of stands there with, like, arms crossed, like, having an emotion.
Avery, big Avery is, like, very overwhelmed by, like, has not moved, is very overwhelmed, like, in a good way, is, like, having some big feelings about this. He's just watching.
Where Gemma's standing is exactly where you remember a mountain lion, just kind of standing back far enough that you didn't feel scared of it because you've always heard that mountain lions are dangerous, but it was present and letting you know its acceptance through its eyes from the distance.
Having feelings, I like this.
Okay, Mo is also going to go up to Avery and join the pile.
As Mo... makes it over there, you see there's a bundle of little squirrels that all sort of come into the same little area and offer you some acorns, some nuts, some almonds somehow? Who knows how they got those? But they're helping provide for you. And then Avery, you remember, based on the positioning of all the animals around you, you think back to where you were standing. And it's where light came down from the trees where they break, and there was a majestic, powerful wolf standing right there, and it howled, and you felt like you were perfectly at home, and like you weren't ever going to be in danger again.
I was never really scared of the woods again after this day, and I guess I didn't really remember why till just now. Guess it was all you.
And little Avery gives the doe / Lizzie a hug, and then hears the sounds of his class off in the distance and turns with excitement and no fear, but just wonder and excitement in his eyes and starts running off towards them. But before he leaves the clearing, he turns around one more time to his animal friends and gives them a little wave and then runs back. And then the forest around you becomes darker and foggier once more. And Lizzie stands up from her kneeling position and turns back to Avery with tears in her eyes and says, okay, so that did make me feel a little bit better, but oh my God.
made me feel a little better too, he says, and kind of like awkwardly pats her on the back. He just kind of awkwardly like.
Lizzie gives him a hug, for sure.
He will hug her back. pretty like, and like kind of a little bit like sniffly and.
Lizzie's full on sobbing, for sure. This is a
that's
big.
That's not helping. That's not helping him.
Gemma kind of like wipes away a tear.
I'm gonna put a little stock photo picture of a little Avery in here because I needed a mental picture. I'm gonna put it in the chat.
I feel like Courtney is like trying to hide that she is like crying, but also is like, oh my God, like get it together. You're like kind of embarrassing me. Avery's so cute.
Are these going to be available anywhere for our listeners, or we're just leaving them in the dark?
Yes, we will make sure that we post this somewhere.
Some stock photos of wolves and...
Above the table, Noah, I'd like to sue you for emotional damage.
Me too. But the episode's not over yet, so let's keep going.
After the hug, Avery will kind of like look around at all of them and be like, thanks. I don't know if that gave us any helpful information. She's going to look at Aya.
She says, decidedly not. But, you know, sometimes character growth is more important than moving forward in our quest. And that's all right. Now that you're more at terms with who you are and who you have been and who you might be, we'll be one step closer to having access to those memories that we need. So that's all right. It's still good.
I'm still a little uncertain as to how to focus on what I don't know what to focus on. My brain's taking me here, but these are all places I've been. I don't know how to get to what I don't already know.
Maybe it's places that you're afraid of us seeing you. I mean, your group of friends here. Obviously, you've just met me, so you're not the best judge of, you know, my character and how much you trust me, potentially. So
I mean, I didn't really want y'all seeing that conversation with my folks. Don't think.
Exactly. So I think that might be part of what you're suppressing and hiding back. Seeing you vulnerable, seeing you in these fearful places might, it's clearly led some of your group to accept you more and understand you more than they have before. She gestures at Lizzie, who is wiping away all the tears and is back to bad bitch status and doesn't care about what Aya's saying anymore.
Avery kind of like gives her a very pointed sort of look.
Aya,
like Lizzie, no. Okay. Like he sees that she's reverting back, and he like looks at her like, oh, I see. He looks at her like he can see what she's doing and has just sort of like fully realized that it's sort of an act.
Can Gemma like step forward like she wants to say something, but she's kind of like afraid to, and just kind of like looks to everybody to like get the okay before talking?
Lizzie notices that Avery's eyeing her a little bit differently and Gemma, you look like you want to say something. Go ahead, girl.
I mean, it just occurred to me, as Captain Aya was saying, that we've only just met, but your memory shows we've kind of always been there.
That's something.
I don't know how it makes sense, but it seems to.
Mo is really confused. But we just showed up net. This is some time traveling shit. Like, we...
Avery, you said that you remember those animals.
I know, but that was us now. Like, we just changed that... Did we just change that memory?
When we got to that memory, I knew those animals were about to show up. That's a good memory for me. It's always has been. Don't know if that means you became those animals for the purposes of this here dream sequence, or if you were always those animals and there's some time fuckery happening here, but I'm happy it was y'all, whether it was back then or not.
Lizzie says, I knew they were talking about me when they said doe, a deer, a female deer in that old movie. That was totally me. Oh my God. Aya steps forward and says, well, that's... So the memory would have always been the same because we just experienced it happen in real time, but... We represented facets of that memory because potentially we were all destined to be here in this moment. And this, she looks very, very thoughtful for a second and then says, I believe this might be further proof that you are the person mentioned in our prophecy, Avery. This is your band of rebellious fighters, ready to stand by your side, to return you to the route and restore balance to the Paragon. I believe this was all meant to happen. And so it did happen before, and so that it will always happen. I know that may not have helped you, Mo, but if...
She sort of looks overwhelmed again.
Mo continues to look confused. As is Sam.
Like, is this Mo, just Mo, or is Sam also confused?
All of the above.
We're very connected.
We're just hand waving potential time travel here. At least that's what I'm doing as a person.
Yeah. Me too. Astral plane changes everything. It's fine. Aya says the way the Paragon works is it's supposed to be activated at the right time, at the right moment, and supposedly it's always been about this. There's somebody meant to use it, and that it will affect time, both past, present, and future, all at the same moment to ensure that it happens in the first place. That's how the legends go, at least. I'm clearly not an expert because I haven't been around the Paragon ever. I don't even know where it is. But the story's always said that someday the arbitrary outcast would return to the route, ensure the Paragon, whatever that means.
Because what is the Paragon? Like, what is it an object, a person? Like,
it's supposedly some sort of device, or maybe external chaotic force, or maybe it's a higher dimensional being.
So safe to say you don't know.
I don't know exactly, but
I figured that was part of why we were here. See what we can find out.
But wait a minute. When we were back at the lab, the Paragon was a place in, it was like a room, and there was a weird sort of energy pulsing through the room. I mean, what if, does it make sense for us to go back there? And would that have something to do with any of this? Or is it just the same word? Like,
as you say that, Aya's eyes shoot up and look at you with an intensity that you have not seen in their eyes since the moment that you met them when they held a knife at you. And they say, you know where the Paragon is? You've seen it with your own eyes?
I mean, sort of. It was like, it was in a room, and it was a space. It was just a wide open space, and there was light and color, and it was swirling all together. It was really confusing, and I didn't understand what it was that I was looking at to be able to make sense of it. But the room itself was labeled as Paragon.
Okay, well, then this is very clear to me that Avery is the chosen one in our prophecy, and this group will restore balance to the entire valley. This is, nothing's been the same since the event when everything went different colors. And they sort of pause for a moment, and I'm going to have them roll wisdom to see if they put two and two together. They rolled really low, so they don't. And they say,
not figured out.
This is more progress than my people have made in the past 80 years. This is fantastic. Avery, we must find these memories and find whatever secret we can to how you get to the Paragon. And now that you know its location, this is fantastic. We can find whatever memories we need from your ancestry and move back towards the Paragon and try to use it. But he might not let you. There's a creature who has been roaming the valley ever since the event and has been brutally attacking people left and right, and only leaves behind a carcass that is picked clean. And no one has ever survived, as far as we know. We found an odd piece of metal at one point, a couple of weeks ago, maybe. No, actually, it was probably last week. There was this piece of metal, and they glance up at Mo, and they have a bewildered look on their face, and they say, actually, it looked just like that one, and points at Mo's park ranger badge that they've been wearing on their vest this whole time. That's bizarre. We found one of those alongside a carcass at one point earlier last week.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Clark.
That's not what the metal said, but it said Big Bend. Sorry, you mean the carcass was named. Oh, I understand. I apologize. Fascinating. So...
Wait. Oh my god. Damn, it seems like so long ago now. What? Mo is just reeling.
We can break this all down once we get out, but The longer we stay in here, the more at risk we are of damaging Avery's psyche permanently. And she glances down at her sundial watch, which is totally a thing inside of a mental space.
Not damage Avery's psyche, please.
Feels a little late for that.
And she kind of pats Mo on the shoulder reassuringly as she's they're looking bewildered and says, it's all right. We'll figure this out. We can deal with him when we get out. We should probably do that before we ensure the Paragon's success, but that's fine. We'll work that out. Avery, for now, take a deep breath. Focus on your animalistic instincts. Dig deep. You're going to have to dig deep.
Demas. Sorry, you enjoyed that so much, Noah.
Yeah, that's true.
What kind of memory you figure I should be looking for? I mean, obviously not a fun one, but...
Well, I imagine the last... Because we saw young Avery get chucked through a portal and thrown into this world, and I believe whatever instincts your parents may have been feeling would have been of intense survival and of maybe panic. Maybe dig into those moments where you are... the most afraid you've been.
He starts to think about a couple of things and like gets a sort of expression, contemplative expression.
I think like at this point, Gemma kind of like walks up and like puts a hand on Avery's shoulder and does like a like look you in the eyes kind of look. And just like trying to like in a grounding way, just remind Avery, you're not doing this alone.
Lizzie reaches over and takes Avery's hand. And squeezes it a little bit and says, we got your back.
Not even a snarky comment. That's how you know they mean it.
Avery takes a big breath and goes, I think we should go that way, and points. He's sort of just sort of, and then he starts walking. He's trying to focus, but he's going to do it by moving.
But as you point, you see a door that is all too familiar to you. It's got a very accessible handle on it that faces upwards, and it's like a really nice push-in handle, and it's got a room number on the outside, and it says room number 420. No, just kidding.
just the moon right there. No.
Gotta have some jokes. It's fine. It says 319 wing A,
and he's gonna go towards the door.
And as Avery pushes through the door, with Lizzie's still holding his other hand, it opens into a field in a neighborhood, and it's a nice sunny day, a nice sunny afternoon. And we see Avery running across the field, and it's a little 9-year-old Avery. So a little bit younger than we've seen before, but not quite as young as the last one. And he's running through the field with an adorable, adorable little border collie that ironically looks pretty similar in color to the wolf that we saw in the woods a little while ago. And Avery is playing catch with a frisbee, and there's a neighbor standing at one end of the field and is talking with their partner about how Avery's parents went out on their first date out of the house alone for the first time in maybe 8 years. Who knows how long it's been? They didn't really say. But this neighbor is clearly a close family friend and someone that Avery's dads trust enough to let them watch Avery for the night. And they're throwing the frisbee to Avery and keep telling Avery, yeah, throw it back. But Avery runs and grabs it and then runs it all the way back to them. Doesn't quite seem to understand how to play frisbee. Really likes to fetch the frisbee. And T-Rex runs right alongside him the whole time. And it's adorable. And Lizzie squeezes Avery's hand a little bit and says, oh my God, that is so cute though.
Avery looks sick to his stomach. That's his expression. That's older Avery's expression.
I'm going to see if Lizzie notices that. Okay, they rolled a 14, so they sort of wheel it back a bit and stop having as much excitement about that, and kind of looks around and peeks at the edges of the park to see where the focus is going. And Avery runs the frisbee back one more time, and the neighbor picks it up and says, okay, you ready? You ready? And throws it real hard, real far. And Avery is sprinting across this field and they are booking it. Like, this Avery is looking so excited and so hyped. And it's going a little bit higher than they thought it would, and it gets hit by a big burst of wind, and so they put an extra burst of speed on, and they do a huge jump. They leap as high as they can, and they don't even realize that they've left the park edges behind. They are not on the field anymore. And as they jump up so high to catch it, huge smile on his face. He feels something else on his back. He feels Rex's paws pushing him from behind. And he's confused about how Rex got that far, got that fast, and why Rex would jump on him while he's jumping. And everybody else sees a big, big old Ford pickup truck coming down the road right at the edge of the field. And Avery had jumped and didn't even notice what was happening. And Rex did jumped up to try to push Avery out of the way. As they both get hit full on, Avery with the more glancing blow, but Rex takes the brunt of it. Avery hears a yelp that's not his. And then the whole field sort of goes black for everybody there. And then it comes back and we see the neighbor standing over Avery, frantically calling the ambulance. And their neighbor's friend is run up. The person in the truck has gotten out and is apologizing so profusely and peering at Avery to see if he's okay. And Avery hears what they realize now is Rex's final yelp. And then it all goes black again.
Our Avery is fully, like, on the ground. Not really able to watch this. It is, yeah.
Lizzie's got her arms around his shoulders, but cannot look away from what is happening. Tears are streaming down her face as well.
I'm so sad about this dog. This dog was dead, but I'm so sad about this dog.
The lights come back up, and Avery's in a hospital bed. And we see the neighbor on the phone pacing back and forth, trying to reach somebody. And then the sun goes down and little Avery's eyes close again. Everything goes dark. It comes back up and we see his dad's rush into the room, frantic with fear and anxiety and panic at Avery in trouble, Avery in the hospital bed, Avery in a hospital at all with what they know. They start talking to the neighbor and not angry voices, but panicked voices in there. What happened? How did this even, what, where was he? Well, how did you not keep your eye on him? He shouldn't even be here. We told you no hospitals, no. And they are like, hey, what were we supposed to do? Look at him. He got broken. Like we couldn't fix this at home. We needed professional help. Those sorts of comments back and forth. Avery fades out again. He fades back in and we see Ray sitting at his bedside, Avery's hand clasped in his and sort of leaning on the bed asleep. And little Avery squeezes his hand and is awake. Little Avery's first question, first time we've heard his voice since the park, is, where's Rex? And Ray can't answer because of how much he's crying. And he says, hey now. He's going to be all right. You're going to be all right. Takes a big gulp. We just got to get you better. And then we'll get that all figured out. Okay. It's all right. And sort of pats Avery's shoulder and says, hey, how are you feeling? Are you going to be all right? And Avery looks in his eyes again and says, no, where's Rex? And Ray looks him back in the eye and says, he just did his best to protect you. And that's all he wanted to do and all he could think about. But he didn't make it, honey. It's going to be all right. And he squeezes Avery's hand with his as Avery starts crying in the hospital bed. And
yeah, Avery's also crying at this point. So it's
fine. Aya might be the only person in the room who's not crying, but...
But I trust Aya like 50% less than I did 2 minutes ago.
We like you, Aya, but like
I wish the listeners could see that, like, the four of us go through every stage of grief.
We might need to have a video component in this podcast.
Yeah.
Just a little brutal.
Like the one by one realization of what was happening. And then just sitting silently with that.
The lights fade out again as little Avery's eyes close as he falls asleep finally. And we come back in the morning when we see Jay just outside in the hallway talking to one of the doctors, and one of the doctors who Avery recognizes from one of the many game nights that his parents have had over the past few years. And Jay is frantically gesturing at Avery's room and at the charts that that the doctor has in his hand. And Avery can't quite make it out, but there's some sort of frantic energy there from Jay trying to make sure that, and older Avery realizes this now, he's making sure that none of the tests came back as werewolf and...
Or, you know, just not human.
Not human in some sort of way. And
like your blood type is, oh no.
Can I interject? Your blood type is OW. Oh, werewolf. Just interjecting. I think adult Avery, will kind of like get a little bit of a realization look and say, I didn't realize that was what they were more afraid of. Guess I was too little to realize.
They were just trying to protect you.
Aya steps forward and says, werewolves have been known to have faster healing abilities than other creatures. So I doubt they were concerned for your well-being as much as they were for who might discover it and might try to take you away from them or use you for some other nefarious purposes.
Was that possible in their world? Are there people in their world that would know what I am?
There are a few people who have crossed over the realms and have made homes for themselves there or here, vice versa, but not near as many as we would hope. One day we hope to achieve a community across the realms, across the stars, but that day is very far away. From what we know, that realm is quite paranoid of things that are not like them. They're not known to be accepting or welcoming of those types. But maybe one day, maybe you're the key, Avery. You and the Paragon and your group here of friends, of a found family, you could be the change.
Yes, we better figure out how to do that then.
As you say that, Lizzie takes Avery's hand again and takes Courtney's hand. Says, well then, let's all do it together. And gestures to everybody.
Avery takes his other hand and kind of pats Avery's hand. A little thanks.
No, I mean, let's all hold hands and help Avery focus.
Gemma holds out a hand.
Are we still in the freaking hospital room?
Until you decide not to be, yes. If you want us to be somewhere else, then just say the word.
Is there anything else he would remember? Is there anything else that he would be waiting to remember?
No, you're good.
Then I think he would...
We fade back to the foggy forest. Do you take Gemma's hand? Do you leave it?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, kind of to. Like
Mo is going to also join and extend a hand very awkwardly.
I think Avery is like,
important question for Mo. Are you grabbing Gemma's hand or are you grabbing Courtney's hand?
Gemma's.
So then Aya in between.
And Gemma's going to give Mo like a reassuring squeeze.
Yeah, nice.
Everybody grabs hands and we start flying towards Avery's memories of werewolves past.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Woo. Okay. Damn. We made it through yet another episode of Queering People's Saving Throws. We are August as Avery, KJ of Supernatural Opinions as Courtney, Elena as Gemma, Sam as Mo, and myself, Noah, as the DM. That was a rough one. Lots of tears in the chat this week. My sincerest apologies. I would, however, appreciate it if you took some time this week to share the show with a friend or two. All of our socials are down in the episode description, along with our website, queeringthingspodcast.com. Thank you all for listening, and we wish you a peaceful road until we meet again. We'll be right back. your animal part. Your I was going to say your animal parts, but that's bad.
Nope. Don't. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. Find a different way to say that.